show is also about creating community, and so there's going to be opportunities for you to participate both on the show and by sharing your input on our Facebook page at The Wheel Mysteries. Before we get started, let's thank some of the underwriters who make this show possible. The Wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture, producing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, Butte County's only community-owned, natural, and organic grocery store offering a wide variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has fresh, hot food, a salad bar, ready-to-eat sandwiches and salads, plus draft kombucha and cold brew coffee, available all day. You can discover the joy of Chico Natural Foods Co-op on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. Open 7 to 10 p.m., 7 days a week. So, welcome back to the first episode of The Wheel. You know, considering the mysteries of living and dying, gives us a lot of places to go with this show. You know, I played the recorded promo for the show to my daughter, and she said, "It's good, Mom. At least it doesn't sound boring." Listen, a show about the mysteries of living and dying should be anything but boring, or scary, or depressing. That's why I'm incorporating some fun stuff like the Who Died This Month segment. I've got to credit this one to Grant here at the station, with a tip of the hat to Jan and Ocean of Rock and Roll. May musician deaths include Lynn Horne, Bob Marley, Perry Como, Doris Day, B.B. King, Frank Sinatra, June Carter Cash, Django Reinhardt, Donna Summer, and Greg Allman. Now, which song by one of these musical now stars in our cosmos do you think I will feature at our break? See, that's our first mystery. Now, tonight's show will feature an interview with Sarah Cruz, one of the founders of Kansas's first green burial cemetery and president of the National Home Funeral Alliance. We'll also hear from local arts advocate and all-around beautiful person in our segment called American Death. We'll be hearing from Mary Gardner. Back to Sarah Cruz, I met Sarah at a National Home Funeral Alliance conference several years ago, and we hit it off immediately, mostly because she was game when my friend Adrian and I said we were going to make the long train ride into Chicago after the evening's conference proceedings concluded, in order to see the bean and drink it at a bar. We didn't even get downtown until close to midnight, and well, the rest is history, or a mystery for all of you, because I'm not going to go into the details. I caught up with Sarah a few days ago in this pre-recorded interview, where we talk about how she got into doing this work, about Heartland Prairie Green Cemetery, and about the National Home Funeral Alliance, which she's the president, and about the letter she and I wrote to a certain famous somebody. Here is the interview. Hold on a second here. Here we go. Excited to have you today, Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Rebecca. I'm so excited to I'm doing good to share this time with you.
Well, I know that you and I could talk on and on about many things, but I'd like to start out with you telling me the story of how you first got into the Deaf Awareness Movement. up to where you are at now, which is you have started a green burial cemetery called Heartland Prairie Cemetery and in Kansas. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
We moved here to Kansas about 6.5 years ago from Preston, Arizona. And I had been, you know, thinking about this idea of green burial, and wouldn't it be great if I could find some land to have a green burial ground. And then for my husband's job, we ended up moving here to central Kansas. And he worked for an agricultural research institute called the Land Institute. And it seemed like this whole idea of green burial would fit kind of nicely into their mission about teaching the communities about engaging with the land, you know, like really having a relationship with the land in the place where you are. So I wrote a proposal to the board of directors about the Green Cemetery, about what green burial is, and asked if they would consider donating land to the project. And they said yes unanimously and donated what amounts to about 13.5 acres of land that had formerly been cultivated that had never been plowed. So we thought it would be a great idea to restore this piece of land to native prairie. So maybe I'll explain to you a little bit about what green burial is.
Yes.
Right. So green burial is more about what it is not than what it is in some ways, you know. So we don't use mulch or, grave liners, you know, that sort of thing. Essentially, it's just putting a body in a biodegradable container into the ground. And it would be a natural body, so one that has not been embalmed. And a lot of people are becoming more and more aware of this, but a lot of people might think that embalming is required. Like, it's the law, and it's not the law anywhere in the U.S. or in any state or on a federal level. So, an unembalmed body in a biodegradable container, and that could be a simple shroud, like just wrapped in a natural fiber, shroud, cotton, you know, linen, silk, and placed in the ground. So there are cemeteries that are conventional cemeteries where they do the, you know, steel casket and the hardwoods that are the rainforest harvested and, you know, concrete vaults and the whole conventional burial.
Yeah, that's the standard, really, isn't it?
That's the standard. And, yeah, kind of ironically, that those are all traditional burials, but I feel like, you know, going back to this more less resource-intensive way of doing burial, it's really the traditional way that we did it for years and years. But now there's more of an eye towards an environmental, more ecological management practices of the cemetery. So we're really rethinking how cemetery spaces look and feel, and it's more about creating open spaces and green spaces for people and, you know, critters to be able to enjoy the great outdoors. And in some cases, not even really, it won't look like a cemetery that we're used to. So in other words, we're not using monuments. And we're restoring the native prairies, and we're taking it that ecological step forward in terms of what we're doing there. Some large-scale conservation-scale burial grounds are in a land trust and have a conservation of larger tracts of land, you know, big pieces of land that are being conserved through the use of natural burial on part of that land. So there's different levels. In those conventional cemeteries, there are some that are now opening a part of their conventional cemetery to green burial practices because more and more people are becoming aware of it and asking for it. So, you know, city cemeteries are trying to accommodate that and, you know, get out and be able to change it up a little bit and see if this is something that people really want.
And I just want to jump in and tell our listeners that in terms of our area here in Butte County, we do not currently have a green cemetery where someone can have a green burial. But in Nevada County, just a county over, they do have a district cemetery that is series, and what I'm looking for is a champion. That's what we really need, is we need someone here in our county like you, Sarah, who's willing to just say, this is doable, and we should do it, and make it happen. I know there's interest. We've gathered signatures, but we need some people who have the time and energy to work on just going through the steps to make it happen. There are places that do green burial, they say, because they are using, you know, biodegradable stuff going into the ground, but it also really matters what's happening above the ground in terms of, are you using petroleum-fueled gas mowers and pesticides?
Yeah. Just like create for the lawn space. It's a big leap of faith. You know, I mean, I never opened a cemetery before. I came up with this wacky idea. But I have a lot of help from my husband, and then we have a board of directors. It's a nonprofit. We formed a nonprofit. And so we've had some like volunteer work days out there. We've created really nice trails to walk on both sides of the cemetery. It's lined with a wooded area on either side. And once the perennial prairie grasses and flowers are established, we will also be mowing trails through the grassland. And it's a really sweet day.
It sounds beautiful. Before we move on in our conversation, do you want to tell people how to find you on Facebook or wherever?
Actually, there is a website for the cemetery, and it's Harlan Prairie Cemetery. You have to figure out how to spell. It took me a long time to realize there's no A in cemetery, it's all E. And prairie, you know, is P-R-A-I-R-I-E, so.
Right.
Anyway, I think you can find it if you just put green burial canvas. It's the first thing that's going to come up. And out here in the heartland, people often use that word heartland on a lot of businesses, and it's a count of words. And I very intentionally separated out those two words because I thought that that reflects what's really happening in this place, is the heart, the land.
Can you tell us what a family might experience if they go through the process with you there at the cemetery?
People come to the cemetery. One of the things that we require is that the family provide the pallbearers. So for a full body burial, they're prepared to lower the body into the ground themselves. And I feel like that's such a key part of it, because rather than doing forms, we're really inviting people to take that step closer and take, you know, full agency over caring for their home until the very end. So that has been really powerful, because even if a funeral home has handled the arrangements and the body has been at a funeral home and then, you know, placed in the plain pine box and brought out to the cemetery, at that point the family then engages in this really profound activity of knowing their loved one into the grave. And so many of us have experienced grave-side services where they're like propped up on a mooring device. You have the service, and then everybody leaves, and then the cemetery staff takes care of lowering the body and filling up the grave. But at Heartland, people can do that. They can work through that whole piece themselves. And in a couple of situations, everyone gathers, decided to fill the grave entirely themselves using the shovels that we provide. In other cases, they'll partially do it, more symbolic, but every time we've had a burial out there, it's so unique and so meaningful for the people to have had a real visceral engagement in burying their dead, that they walk away from it and say, I've just never been through a funeral like that. That was incredible. I'm not feeling so fulfilled that they've gone the distance.
I think this leads very naturally into a conversation about home funerals, and I know you're the president of the National Home Funeral Alliance, but I think maybe we should talk a little bit about reclaiming that ritual. I mean, you're talking about this part of what will work for them. And in some cases, in some families, it was just about allowing enough time to be with the body for a while, perhaps to symbolically wash the body, not even, you know, having to take on the three-day all-at-home, take the body yourself to the cemetery or crematorium, you know, just realizing it's not an emergency and you do have it's legally and emotionally okay to take the time you need. And because something happens inside us, I think, when we do, there's a reason why it takes us a couple of days of protected time to process someone dying, because, you know, it's a big change. And when we are more in touch with it, I think it all happens in a more integrated way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that, you know, when we talk about funerals in this country, it immediately goes to the cost, you know, how incredibly expensive, you know, modern American funerals are, you know, upwards of $8,000 to $10,000. And that's usually the first question that I get is, this is going to save me money? We've created like a real disturbance to our own emotional and spiritual selves. Inadvertently, we've regulated ourselves as spectators during one of life's most important transitions. And we can't quantify that loss. Like, what has that done to our communities and our families that we don't know how to do these tasks after someone dies? Whether we're afraid to venture into that because it's so culturally unfamiliar now, but it used to be, you know, just part and parcel of living in community.
We've become lost in terms of what we want, and that's why I think it's good for people to think about it and talk about it and notice, you know, what they resonate with and what they don't. It's, you know, certain things aren't for everybody, and that's okay. Hey, I've got to move on. I do want to make sure we get in the story of, I guess, the first time that I really got to spend time with you was at a national conference in Chicago, but it was in California, I believe, at a conference when we were sitting in the back.
We were both the National Funeral Alliance conferences.
Yes.
That we were at. I just want people to know that the National Funeral Alliance, anybody can join, it's free to become a member, and we hold these amazing conferences. We have one coming up in October. So these are where you and I became acquainted.
And my memory is of us sitting in the back on a third day, and we had watched a celebrity person talking about how someone in their family had done a home funeral yet. And that's the way to get the word out, we said. You know, we need to get famous people to talk about this. And we're brainstorming, trying to figure out who can we get, you know, to be a face, to make home funerals and being burial more normalized or even cool. And I think it was you who came up with our famous person. Who did we end up writing to, Sarah?
We ended up writing to Jimmy Carter. President Jimmy Carter. He had just made public his cancer diagnosis. And it seemed like, wow, wouldn't that be amazing if Jimmy Carter had a home funeral and a clean burial? It would be such a beautiful bookend to how funerals happen in this country, because embalming started during the Civil War, and after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, his body was embalmed. So that really marked the time when Abraham Lincoln was in this open casket on a train that made like 12 stops on its way to Springfield, Illinois, which was where he was to be buried. And people saw that, wow, look at that. And that's when we began to pay someone else to take care of our dead. So wouldn't it be amazing if it was another president who raised the awareness of how this other way of doing it is possible? So yeah, we wrote a letter to President Jimmy Carter.
And he responded.
He did. Now, he didn't at first, and I was like, this is really important. I wasn't sure if he'd really gotten our package, because we sent it to, like, the Carter Foundation, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have a home address for
So you talked about your Facebook page, and I think you and I are both, you know, trying to get people to engage more consciously with these end-of-life considerations. And what do you think is working and not working to try to bring death out of the closet?
Well, I think more and more it is coming out of the closet. It's kind of a trending topic, you know,
yes.
These days. I think that it really needs to happen in our local community. But that's where we need to get our message out. People are intrigued, but they want to know. They want to be, like, responsible planners and not, you know, leave everybody in a lurch after they die.
People read about things in the New York Times, or we've seen articles and we see things on Facebook, but until you're really engaging with it, where the rubber hits the road, which is with the people around you and in your own life, it's really not going to make a big difference. I talk to people about this at parties, and what's interesting is that when I bring this topic up, sometimes in the context of starting the show, sometimes in terms of the different events that we've had here locally, people always give me kind of a funny look, like, are you really talking about this right now? And then the next thing that happens is they start telling me a story. Yes, I say, they don't know what to say, and then they say, well, actually, my brother's going through this, or when my mom went, this is how I felt, or, you know, my wife is dealing with this, and it always comes down to a story. So I think sharing our stories, and for those who are listening, to be able to talk to people, you know, who aren't listening and say, this is what I heard about on the radio. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
All right, Sarah. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you. I think my last question will be, is there anything else that you would like people to know about this movement, about what you do, that sort of thing?
Well, I think I'll just make another plug for the National Material Alliance and encourage people to take a look at our website, which is homefuneralalliance.org, also a nonprofit. And, you know, there's a lot of information there, practical information on holding a home funeral. We can also be respond to emails, questions that way.
To Sarah, the president of the National Home Funeral Alliance. And if you want to know more about her work on the cemetery, go to her Facebook page at Full Circle Heartland Home Funerals and Prairie Cemetery to see our letter to Jimmy. Yes, friends, it's storming outside. Thunder and lightning, and I saw it rolling in over Table Mountain as I was driving into town, and it has hit. So we're having some very rare, intense weather here at the moment. I want to take some time now to thank the underwriters who have made the wheel possible. The wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Elderberry Apothecary, hosting the second annual local herb fair this Sunday, June 2nd, 10 to 4, at 1 Mile in Bidwell Park. There will be workshops, info about herbal medicine, plants, teas, and organic food, plus fun with botanicals for kids. Admission is free. For more information about the second annual local herb fair, visit theelderberryapothecary.org. And by BKG Plumbing, your local, fast, full-service plumbing company. No matter how small or how large your plumbing problems are, BKG Plumbing has an affordable solution for you. Call Brian at 591-4222 or visit bkgplumbing.com. Thanks to Elderberry Apothecary and BKG Plumbing. So I know you've all been dying to know who our mystery musician is. Let's reveal the answer to one of this show's big questions of the evening by taking a short musical break to feature a musician I love who died in the month of May. Love. way to his final resting spot. Isn't it funny how we do that? We go out, we show up. Greg died at age 69. Not very old. I know some of us are getting close to that. He used to sing, "The road goes on forever." What do you think? Is his road still going on somewhere? What do you think happens when you die? Will you get to see Greg Allman there? I think that if there is a heaven, I should get to see Greg Allman there. I wonder if he had an advanced health care directive. He had been battling liver cancer for some years, and his manager, Michael Lehman, has this to say about Greg's final days. He says, "I would say he knew for the last 6 months that he was getting toward the end of his life, and he became resolved and peaceful. We canceled tour dates when we had to, but we ended up playing through the end of October. We'd hoped to get through the end of the year, but he'd had another bout of pneumonia and other respiratory ailments. For good or for bad, he got to be home and relax, even though his true passion was being on the road. He'd listen to music, read books, see his kids. He got married to Shannon in February, so he was able to take advantage of that time with her and being in his house, sitting by the pool, playing with his dogs. And thank goodness he did not suffer at the end. He died peacefully at home." This description makes me think that Greg probably had thought it out. I bet he did have an advance directive, which makes me love him even more. Well, I'd love to keep talking about Greg, but I have another segment I want to introduce called Miss American Death. The mystery of what happens when we die can seem overwhelming, but dying is also universal and as natural as being born. Hearing other people's stories and sharing our own can help us make some sense of the mystery. We can learn from each other. We can think about what we want. Like the poet Mary Oliver says, "I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular." I think of every death that way, too. For each show, we'll hear an ordinary person tell their story in this next segment called This American Death. Tonight, we'll be hearing from Mary Gardner. Many of you know her as a tireless arts advocate here in Chico. She's also the daughter of Lou Gardner, poet, set builder, actor, and local character extraordinaire. Here is her story of Lou's death and how she took care of him at home.
I think the part of the story that I would really want to share with people is it's worth the effort, and it's worth the discomfort, and it's worth some of the awkwardness that comes along, and especially when you're dealing with family, in my case, a large family, and also complicated relationships. My dad was not an easy person to grow up with. He made our lives very difficult, but was able later in his life to really redeem himself and be the dad that I wanted. And I had a really good relationship with him the last 30 years of his life, but of course, other family members didn't have that relationship. So the end of his life reflected all of that, but I really stayed strong and firm in my value or my vision for how he was going to die. And I wanted that to be at home. I wanted him to be able to, be surrounded by people who loved him and surrounded by his books and all the artwork that he'd collected over the years, just in a place where he was in the most nurturing place, I think, for him. So I think that's what I'd want to share is to if you have an idea you want to do it differently, stay steadfast in that and people will follow. And that's what I really found, that it, because I was able and willing to step up and be a leader, that my family and friends were able to step in and be there, which I have to say surprised me. At some points I thought, oh, I'm going to be all alone in this, and I really wasn't. Everybody showed up. Dad was in really poor health, especially few months before he died, where my nephew, his grandson, died unexpectedly, drowned. And so our family was really going through such upheaval and grief. And I knew before my nephew died that my dad was, this was the end of the road, really. You know, I was his primary caregiver. He lived in a little studio behind my house. So I was, you know, intimately involved with him every day. But I felt so strongly that we couldn't handle another death so soon after my nephew, even though in the end it did turn out that he died 4 months later. But I actually said to him, "Dad, you need to hang on." And we had this conversation, eyeballs to eyeballs. And he said he was willing to try. And I feel guilty about that because he was in pain some of the time, and he was uncomfortable. He was in his bed, which was so different for him, who had been so active. Anybody that remembers Lou Gardner or worked with him or knew him would probably remember him on a bicycle with a big smile, or, you know, doing poetry readings. He loved being busy. He loved having his calendar full and being able to look forward to getting together with people or whatever he was doing, going to listen to music. Or he was just, as someone said when he died, he truly had a lust for life. So it was difficult those last few months seeing him so limited and challenged. But, you know, I was so grateful to him every day that he stuck around for us to get through those initial few months of the shock of my nephew's death. And so really, in the end, you know, I thought he was pretty stable. And actually, you know, I have to say that I do believe that it was kind of a medication screw-up in the end, and I have some guilt about that too. But I know he was ready to go, and he went in his sleep. And, you know, I have to say, because I've been taking care of him so intensely, it wasn't a shock, but of course I was immediately involved in then thinking about, okay, now what do we do, right? And luckily I had thought about who I would call, because I am lucky enough to have people in my life that are involved in home funerals. And so I called my friend, and who I've known since I was 10 years old, who happens to live in the area. And it was so amazing. He just showed up. And then my other friend, who's a nurse, who is very much an advocate of, you know, dying at home and home funerals. And both of them were there for me and basically held me through this process and were resources, and immediately knew what we needed to do, because I knew I wanted to have him, his body, in his little house. And we got, my friend knew we had to go get ice and put him on ice. And, you know, I'd been so intimately involved with his body too, you know, which was so weird because you don't know what you're going to be capable of. Looking ahead, when I was younger, I would have never thought I would have taken care of my dad in that way, that I would have been comfortable helping him, you know, within his frailty, right? But when he died, I already knew his body, so, and with my friends there and the support of them, you know, handling him felt very natural. I wasn't squeamish at all. I don't know if I just knew he had lived such a great life, particularly the last half. And I think being supported was the most important and special part of that process. I wasn't alone. And I, as I said earlier, I wasn't sure my family was going to come through for that, because they have all have a variety of ideas of all of this end-of-life stuff, right? And I knew I was doing something different. But anyway, so then, you know, of course, a lot of phone calls and getting the word out. And in the end, my entire family showed up to be there for that weekend. And we cleaned the room, and we put my one sister brought all these candles over. And it was October, but we turned on the air conditioner, so it was really cold in there, and the lighting was very subdued, and it was really beautiful. You know, I put this afghan on him that he loved, and this hat that was his to look okay, you know, and luckily his eyes were closed. Anyway, it all worked out great. I think my experience of my dad's death made me feel proud of myself, that I could be a leader in doing something differently than what a lot of society, most of society, is doing, and gave me more confidence about that part of it. I do want to say that my dad would have loved this. He was such a ham, and he's just getting publicity even after he's dead, which it just would give him such a kick. So just continue to feed that man's ego.
Thanks to Mary. Mary did a great job with that. That's exactly what I wanted with this segment. And she touched on so many things. She talked about how important it is to have community and the empowerment that comes when we engage. And so I really give a lot of thanks out to Mary for her bravery in telling her story. You know, before we finish up tonight, I want to leave you with a tip for your exit plan. Now, in my mind, the exit plan is all those little things you do to prepare for your death. And tonight's tip is that you start a folder for your exit plan. It might be on your computer if you think your loved ones will be able to find it there, but I think an old-fashioned manila folder works great, too. In my family, the tradition started by my grandpa and carried on by my parents is to title this folder, Just in Case. Which cracks me up because it gives you the impression that death might not actually happen, but just in case it does, this is where you find all the important stuff. You can call it whatever you want, but I encourage you to start that folder. There's a lot of stuff that can go in there. You can Google and find countless lists to get you started. But I think just having the folder titled and waiting in an easily accessible place is a good start. Because in addition to the official papers you might stick in there, mine is also full of scraps of paper that say things like, play this song when I die. What songs would be on your scraps of paper? Write down a few, and they could be your first addition to the folder. Some people are listening to this program that's heard me say this many times. And so for those of you who already have your folder started, think about what more you can add to your folder. There's so many precious thoughts and memories that we have to share with those who love us, and this folder can be a place for those too. Last but not least, here is the latest news in the death awareness movement. So the big news this month is that the state of Washington has passed legislation to permit human composting. This is national news, and it has certainly captured our imagination. Many people have sent me links to let me know about it, including my niece back home in Indiana, who read about it in the New York Times. If you want to know more about it, I have a link up on Facebook at The Wheel Mysteries. Post a comment and let me know what you think. Would you like to be composted? In more local news, I want to let you know that we have a local death cafe that meets regularly at the Chico Branch Library. You might be going, what is death cafe? Well, at death cafe, people, all different types of people, all ages of people with all sorts of different stuff going on, anybody is welcome. We get together, we drink tea, we eat snacks, and we discuss anything related to death. Everyone is welcome. There's no agenda. There's no therapy promised. There's nothing being sold. Bring your curiosity and your stories, and we offer an open, respectful, confidential space and light refreshments, and the events are free. You know, this radio show is actually a next step in the evolution of our local network called the Alliance for Support and Education in Dying and Death. And that's a really long title for the work that I've done with Milana McNeil and many other Alliance allies for the past 8 years or so here in the area. You can find out more about that at befriendingdeath.org. You can also register there to get notifications of upcoming events by the Alliance and also on this show. also be putting stuff on the Wheel Mysteries Facebook page about the Green Burial Council, the National Home Funeral Alliance, and other sites related to this show. And I would like the Facebook page to be a community gathering place, so I'd like you to feel free to post questions, thoughts, or ideas for future shows. I already have a long list of show topics. The latest research on near-death experiences, the lost art of caning, various cultural and religious approaches to death and dying, what's it like to be a coroner or a young widower, green burial, sky burial, mushroom suits, and on and on. But what questions do you have? What would you like to discuss? Do you have a story to share for this American death? Let me know at the Wheel Mysteries on Facebook. And while you are there, like the page and share it with friends so that you can all know what's coming up on future episodes. We're getting close to the end of the show, but because I believe every death is a new beginning, I want to end with a poem by John O'Donohue called For a New Beginning. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you are ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. That's John O'Donohue for a book called To Bless the Space Between Us. I want to thank you for listening to The Wheel right here on KZFR, People Powered Radio. I always wanted to say that. And as your host, Rebecca Chenelou, for my send-off, I will encourage you to all go out there and